This title sounds really salacious, The Original Desperate Housewife, but it's very accurate, as you'll see. We're going to go to the sixth reading today, Genesis 39, chapter 7, verse 7, pardon me. So to bring everybody up to snuff, after we finish talking about Yehuda and all the things that happened to Yehuda are a result of Yosef being sold. So really, it's all about Yosef. And we have a messianic birth, as we read about yesterday. And then we go back to Yosef. Yosef comes to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, as a lowly slave. And he gets sold into the master of the local butchery. According to other opinions, he is the local executioner. Either way, he's an important man in Egypt. You know, having steak is important. Killing people is important. A strange society. Yosef comes in an entry-level slave, and in the course of a very short time, he rises to prominence. So much so that he becomes the essential CEO, becomes the most trusted person in the entire estate. So we have this massive compound, and Yosef is the man. And his master, whose name is Potiphar, trusts him implicitly. And Yosef starts to take care of himself. He forgets his mourning, his sadness, the family that he never had a chance to say goodbye to, the father whom he loves. And he seems externally like a member of Egyptian high society. And so, immediately after this all happened, Yosef's master's wife raises her eyes up seductively to Yosef. And she says to him, Shichvo imi, lie with me. Now, Rashi doesn't comment on the words acharei hadvarim ha'ilo, was after these things. What, after what? After what did this happen? So the Radak says, after a time that Yosef was in the Egyptian home, and he became very prominent and honored, and he had really, in a sense, the responsibility of the entire compound or the entire operation. So everything seems to have finally worked out. They wanted to kill him. They didn't manage to kill him. He was protected. That's great. And after him being protected, he was sold as a slave. That's not so good. But that turns out okay because he gets into a nice, cushy position. And he's living well. And just when he's living well, just everything seems right, a new problem. Now his master's wife is a little desperate, and she begins to make overtures and advances to him. And it seems like every time something goes well for Yosef, something goes bad for Yosef. But in truth, this is really for the best. Precisely because he goes to prison, precisely because he interprets the dreams, that's why and how he will rise to prominence and eventually become viceroy of Egypt. So, achar advarim ha'ilo means there's a common sort of trajectory that follows Yosef's career path or development of his life. It's called Hashgacha Pratis. And in the end, as we say, Hakol Tova, everything works out for the best. So that's how Radak interprets the words Acharei HaDvarim Ha'ilo. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, from the fact that the Torah uses such vulgar language, Atemer Shichva Imi, she didn't say, let's have coffee. She was very vulgar, very, very, very direct in her overtures. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the way she spoke, this manner of licentiousness that she expressed herself, like a prostitute, really the lowest level, a vulgar, vulgar person. So this gives us an idea of who we're dealing with. You know, she may have been a woman of prominence, and she may have had a high position due to marriage, but really, at the core, she's a vulgar person, and a licentious person. Highly immodest. Vayimoin. Yosef refuses. Vayimer. And he says, Elishas Adonav, to the wife of his master, Hein Adoni Layoda Iti Ma Babois. My master doesn't know anything that's going on in the whole house. I mean, like, basically, he trusts me implicitly. V'chol Asher Yeshle, everything that he has, Nasan Biyodi. Everything that he has, he's given me. This is an expression of trust. He fully trusts me. He leaves it all in my hands. Now, this is a very interesting word, this Vayimoin. If you take a look inside the Chumash, look on top of the word Vayimoin. You will see a cantillation that looks kind of like an endless Z. It goes back and forth, looks like this, back and forth and back and forth. And this is a very rare sign, cantillation sign, which only appears less than a handful of times in the entirety of the Torah. And it goes something like this. It's like a very long sound. Something goes back and forth and back and forth. So the Targum Yonasan says Vayimoin means that he refused to be physically close to her as she wanted. But the Medrash Seichel Tev says something unbelievable. And let me preface this by telling you that I once heard from a communications expert that something like 80% of the message has nothing to do with the words being used. 80% of the message is about the tone inflection and about facial expression and about body language. So the body language and facial expression account for the vast majority of a communication. It's not the words. The words have to be in a certain frame. And if the words are within a certain syntax, then they have a certain meaning. And there are many examples for this. You know that famous story I like to share every once in a while about the guy who said, Yankel Zaganov? Jacob, Yankel Zaganov. So he was very angry, Yankel. He went to the rabbi. He said, the rabbi, he called me, I'm a Ganov. The rabbi calls in the man. He says, Moshe, you called Yankel a Ganov? He says, I certainly did. You have proof? He says, what proof? Everybody knows he's a Ganov. He's a thief. It's common knowledge. The rabbi said, that's not good enough. You can't defame somebody because of common knowledge. And he said, you have to get up on the bima, you have to get up on Shabbos when there's a packed full synagogue, and you have to announce that Yankel is not a Ganov. So this was a time where people actually listened to what the rabbi said. There's no choice. Okay, fine. Gets up on the bima, and it's very quiet, and the entire crowd is wondering what Moshe is doing on the bima. It's time for the rabbi to speak. And he says, I have a little announcement to make. And the rabbi is nodding approvingly, waiting for him to speak. And he says, tell me, my friends, Yankel is not a Ganov. Jacob is not a thief. So it's all about inflection. It's all about body language. So the Medrash Seichel Tev says this concept of communication, of what the Torah means, is not just the words of the Torah. The cantillation, the tune of the Torah, is also halacha l'maishah m'sinai. You have to read it right. If you read it as a question, it's a question. If you read it as an answer, it could be an answer. It's not about the words. So the Medrash Seichel Tev says, analyze the tune, analyze the cantillation, the trop. What does Vayimoyin say? It says Vayimoyin gives you this whole long thing. He says it couldn't say this. But what this does tell you is how vigorously Yosef protested. He protested and protested and protested. It's just one word in the Chumash. It's just one word in the Bible, Vayimoyin. But it wasn't just one word. This was a vigorous protestation that went on for a long time. And she continued to hit on him and make these advances. And he continued to refuse her. And he said to her, he said to his master's wife. So Ramban says, why doesn't it say, Vayemer la? He said to her, we know who this is talking about. And Ramban says, because Yosef was afraid of her. She was a very powerful lady. She may have been a vulgar and low person. She may have been classless, she may have been basically a harlot, but she occupied the position of first lady in this compound, and therefore Yosef speaks to her with deference. Even though she's actually making these overtures and advances to her, Yosef speaks to her as the lady, my lady. He speaks to her as the mistress, the owner's wife, not as you. So he's very respectful. What's the point? Ramban says he knew she could make his life a Gehenna. She could ruin his life. And she probably threatened to do that. But Yosef said, I am afraid of her. I speak to her with deference and respect, but I'm more afraid of Hashem. So even though Yosef is being threatened, and he knew they can get into some very big trouble, nonetheless, Yosef, ultimately, his life was guided and dominated, not by the fear of another person or what his mistress could do to him, the home mistress at home, the chatelaine, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did he actually say to her? He said, "Hey, Adoni lo yoda." So the Rabbeinu Bachaya says, "You have a husband, lady. He has a and that husband is my master. So what do you want from me? Adoni is my master. That's your husband. Like, would you stop this, please? This is not even a question of of this is not appropriate for me. It's not appropriate for you. This is all wrong. The Shachal HaTeira says, Hei Nadoini also alludes to another master. What Yosef was telling her was, it's not just about your husband. I have a master. My master is God. And I live with fear or reverence or awe for Hashem. So it's not even an option. A colleague of mine was once telling a story that there was in Australia on the Bondi Beach. There were two moms that came into the store. One was a swimwear mom. One was an observant Jewish woman. And he noticed that the two children had a similar reaction when they passed the candy section. They had a fit, as children sometimes do. And the swimmer mom is, no, we're not having this candy. And the child said, yes, and as children can do, they threw a fit. And in the end, the child got the candy. And then a little while later, this observant Jewish woman, dressed very differently, obviously, comes at her child, and the child sees the candy, and the child starts having a fit. And the mother says, we're not having the candy. And the child says, why not? I want it. The mother says, because it's not kosher. And the child is quiet. In other words, there are certain things that are negotiable and certain things that are not. And even children learn that very early on. So Yosef said to her, look, this is not just a question of, I'm afraid of your husband, I don't want to violate his trust. I have a duty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am an observant person. I live with reverence for Hashem. So I have a master, and he's God. And therefore, no matter what you try to do, you will not be able to seduce me. So just give it up. Leave me alone, lady. Stop it. And he goes on to say, Einenu gadol b'bayis hazeh. There is nobody greater in this home, nobody more prominent, more responsible, mimeni, than I. V'lechosach mimeni me'uma. The master of this home has not withheld anything from me. Kiim oisach. With the only one exception, that's you. Kasher at ishte, as you're his wife. How could I do something so bad, so evil? And I would sin before Hashem. So here, before what was said in euphemism, or as alluded to, that Hein Adoni, there is a master, here Yosef spells it out openly. He says there's two issues going on over here. There's the issue of how could I violate your husband's trust? And then there's another issue, and that is I have a responsibility to Hashem. And Rabbeinu Bechaya explains that's exactly why there is such a seeming redundancy and unnecessary length here. Because Yosef is explaining to this lady two reasons why this is a non-starter. It ain't going to happen. So stop it. Give it up. Number one, I cannot violate the trust that your husband put in me. I can't do that. Bein adam l'makom, bein adam l'chaveru, pardon me. Interpersonal relationship, I can't violate his trust. Number two, I cannot violate what Hashem says. I can't do that. And as Rabbeinu Bechaya says, because b'nei noyach, which means all of humanity, not just Jewish people, were obligated a responsibility to follow the laws of common decency. And this is licentiousness. And this is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs b'nei noyach. Because if he's an observant Jew, and she says, I never heard of a Jew. How would she hear of a Jew? They were not even a nation. They were just a family. How is this lady supposed to hear? You're not talking about some high society, cultured woman. You're talking about a common harlot. She probably did not have a lot in the brain area, and she was just a very, seductive kind of person. So how is she supposed to know that? So Yosef says, it's not a question of I'm Jewish or not Jewish, never heard of a Hebrew. We have responsibility to God. Everybody knows this. Society had some ideas about God and higher forces and powers. Of course, the big question that comes is Yosef is first afraid of the master and only afterwards afraid of God. He's first afraid of violating trust between another person and only afterwards worried about doing something which is wrong from a spiritual or faith-based perspective. How could that be? So Ramban says, Yosef is not talking to himself, nor is he expressing his own sentiment. He's talking to this lady. She is not the sharpest blade in the drawer. He's talking to her in a way she should understand. He's trying to get her to stop it. He says, please stop these advances. It's wrong. Stop it. He said, I can't violate the trust. And anyway, he says, even if you thought I could do that, I'm never going to violate my responsibility towards Hashem. So that's how it was spoken. Avraham ben Rambam answers a similar thing. He says, this is not about how Yosef felt. Obviously, for Yosef, the fear of Hashem is greater. But here, he's explaining to her why she should end this. But she doesn't. Vayhi kedabra el Yosef. She continues to talking to Yosef. And she does it yom yom, day after day. V'lo shama ela, he doesn't listen to her. Lishkav etzla, to lie with her. Lihyes ima, to be with her. First of all, you missed the Rashi. Rashi on verse 9 says, V'chatasi lelekim. What's the point? The point is that even though the Torah wasn't given yet, and even though she wasn't a Hebrew, so she wouldn't understand it, but b'nei noyach nitzav al ha'arayis, when it came to mitzvahs that governed decency, licentiousness, and the common etiquette about the idea of adultery in a married woman, this is already before the Torah was given also. It's something that comes from the time of Noach, really from the time of Adam. Now, the verse 10 is a strange verse because, first of all, kedabra al Yosef yom yom. She talked to him day after day. What are we trying to say over here? Number two, it says, v'leishama aileha. He didn't listen to her. Okay, we know what she wants. She said to begin with. This whole encounter, the narrative started off her saying, shichvoy me, lie with me. We know what that means. So why does it have to say, after saying, v'leishama aileha, the Torah then tells lishkav etzla, to lay next to her, but that's before it said, shchva imi. Now it's lishkav etzla. Before it said, lie with me, which is like a carnal thing. It indicates kind of an intimacy, whereas lishkav etzla seems to be just lie next to me. And then lihi yes ima, to be with her. So what does that mean? What is the Torah trying to tell us? So first of all, with regard to yom yom, the Das HaKeni of Bali HaTesvis says that these ridiculous advances and her attempts at trying to seduce Yosef span the course of a year. How do we know that? Because in the Megillah, it says about the nefarious plans that were hatched by Haman. It says, miyom liyom u'michodesh lachodesh, from day to day and from month to month, hu chodesh shneimasar. And we know that the lottery that was drawn by Haman to decide the appropriate day, quote unquote, for his mass genocidal plans, so the right day was going to be, turned out to be the next year, 12 months later, Adar. He drew the lots in Adar, and he was going to kill the Jewish people the next Adar. So that's miyom liyom. Yom liyom, day to day. What does day to day mean? Day to day, that means a year. So Das HaKeinim says, Vayhi kedabra al Yosef, this incredible pressure went on for a year. And she's a powerful lady. And she could have him thrown into prison, which she does in the end. She could have slandered him. She surely threatened him. She tried to sweet-talk him. This was very intense. I mentioned in the class two nights ago that the Medrash says, Kol Mashi Idali Yankiv Idali Yosef, everything that happened to Father Jacob happened to Yosef. One of the things is that Jacob wrestled with an angel, and Yosef, a dark angel, a Darth Vader angel, and so did Yosef. He wrestles with his Yetzer Hara. A whole year, this beautiful woman throwing herself at Yosef for a year, begging him, cajoling him, trying to seduce him in every way, and he refuses, steadfastly refuses these advances day after day for a year straight. At some point, she gave up using her full vulgar language, and she didn't speak so explicitly. She said, Lishkav etzla. Rashi says, what does it mean, Lishkav etzla? Afilu b'lei tashmish, even without any intimacy. Of course, that could lead to intimacy. As Ramban says it, she said, just sit with me on the couch. Just don't disrobe. Just let's...
She didn't ask him to dance.
It doesn't say she asked him to dance. She said, like Ramban says, hu bevigdoi, v'hi bevigdoi, you wear your clothes, he's wearing her clothes. Just li yasima, Ramban says, just let's flirt. Let's talk a little. This is what the equivalent of today's days of sexting or other mishigas to have. Right? Anthony Weiner with his antics, Meshuggah antics of, you know, emailing, texting. Nothing doing. Liyes ima, Rashbam says he wouldn't be alone with her. He never was, violated yichud. Yichud means a man is not allowed to be alone with a woman. End of story. There's nothing to talk about. She would follow Yosef into a room, close the door. Yosef would run out of the room. He wouldn't be alone with her. Forget Liyes ima, just to be with her. No, he's following the straight and narrow. This goes on for a year. Verse 11. And it came to pass on this day. Vayovoy habaisa, he came to the house. And he came lasis molachte to do his work. The ein ish me anshe habayas sham baboyas. Nobody's home. Nobody's home. What day was this? Vayehi kayoy mazeh. Bechor Shor says, just as you can't deny when it's day, so too the story is absolutely crystal clear. There was a very, very disgusting story that broke a few weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago, about a very famous leftist Israeli reporter who made very inappropriate advances. He tried to physically abuse a woman, and she rejected his overtures, and so what was his response? There was a misunderstanding. That's the Mishigas. When there's inappropriateness, when somebody makes advances, when somebody behaves in a manner which is immodest, it's all of a sudden it becomes a misunderstanding. How many rapists claim she wanted me? This was a very famous politician as a young person got a rapist off with that kind of complaint, that kind of defense. So one could say, yeah, it's a story. There's Yosef's version, there's Potiphar's wife's version. He says she came down to me. She says he came on to me. We don't know what happened over there. No, Bacharsha says, Vehi kayem azeh. You should know that the story was beyond any shadow of a doubt. Yosef did not do anything wrong here. He really didn't. And he came to the house to do his work. What kind of work is he doing in the house? So there's nobody there. There's nobody to, the house is quiet. So Yosef was an accountant, like a nice Jewish accountant. The Targum says, Livdeg bekis v'chushbena. He came to check out, there's a perfect day to do the books, because everybody's away. Why is everybody away? What's going on here? And why was this a day that she knew, this is the day she could finally hatch this plan? So Rashi says, it doesn't say which day, but it says kahayoy mazeh, like this day. This is like a big day, a day everybody knows about. Vayhi kasher higia yoy miyuchad. When the special day came. This is Yom Tzchok, the day of coarse laughter and merriment. This is the day Yom Eid. This was their big holiday, their big faith holiday. So when this big holiday came, the holiday that everybody knows about, and everybody goes to the house of worship, you don't miss this. Religious, not religious, some days everybody goes. So this was that day. Shaholchu kulam lebei savedazara. They all went to the house of idolatrous worship. Omra, the wife of Potiphar, said, she said, Ein li yem hagun, I don't have a better day. Lihizokik li yesik vayem ezeh. This is the day. Today I'll do this. Today it'll happen. Nobody's here. Nobody's going to be coming. And therefore she says, Omra lehem, she said to the people, Oy chaylani, I'm sick. I'm so sorry, I can't come. I have a headache. I can't go. So that's the day. And that's from Potiphar's wife's side. And Yosef came on this very day also. He's a Jew. He doesn't celebrate this day. So he doesn't have to go to this house of worship. He's not interested. But he does come to do his work. So what does that mean, to do his work? So the Gemara has a dispute about this. There's two sages. There's Rav and there's Shmuel. Rav was the great Rosh Yeshiva outside of Eretz Yisrael who studied under the tutelage of Rabbi Yochanan. And Shmuel also studied under that tutelage. Rav studied under Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi as well. And they became the two outstanding Torah leaders of Bavel, of the Babylonian exile, which is outside of Israel. And incidentally, Rav and Shmuel had different area of expertise. When it came to ritual issues, laws that govern Shulchan Aruch about Bein Adam Lamokim, between us and God, like ritual law, mitzvahs, Rav is the halacha is always like Rav. When it came to judiciary law, when it came to civil law, Shmuel was the master. So they had different approaches. Obviously, they both knew everything, but they had different. There was always a different perspective here. And that's why the halacha is always according when it comes to ritual. When there's a dispute between Rav and Shmuel, the halacha is like Rav. When there's a dispute in judiciary issues, the halacha is always like Shmuel because of this. It says, halacha ke Rav b'yisura, halacha ke Shmuel b'mameina. Anyway, we go on to this Rashi. Rav Shmuel. Chad Omar one says, malachte mamash. He came to do his work. Whatever work he did. Maybe he's an accountant. That's part of what he did. Potiphar had it good. He had a servant who could be the CEO. He could be the accountant. He could be the butler. He was good in human resources, HR. He was great. Yosef was a versatile master of so many different trades. V'chad Omar, and the other one said, La'asayis tzarachav. He came to do his needs. His needs. He couldn't say no anymore. It was just too much. 12 months. 365 days of endless advances. An orphaned boy, hated by his family, sold into slavery, desperate for affection, for love, and he's being seduced day after day after day for 12 months. He couldn't take it anymore. So, well, if he couldn't take it anymore, how does that square with the next verse? Next verse, we find out he runs out of the house. Says Rashi, you know what happened? Ella shenidus le'demus de'yuknei shel aviv. As he was about to sin, as he was about to cave in, he suddenly saw the image of his father's face. He saw the image of his father's face, k'de'isav m'secha seita, as the Gemara tells us in m'secha seita. And when he saw his father's face, that's when he somehow managed to pull himself together and he chose not to make this terrible mistake. She grabbed him by his clothes. Lamer saying, Shichva imi, sleep with me. Or Rechayim says, doesn't say she said anything. She didn't have to say anything. The way she grabbed his clothes said everything. This is what she meant. Let's do it. The Einish Manche HaBayis. There's nobody there, right? It's empty. The house is empty. Vayazev Bigdei Biyada. He leaves the garment in her hands. Ramban says he never raised his hand to a woman. A decent man never raises his hand, no matter what's going on. And anyway, she was the mistress of the home, always with respect. She grabbed his clothes. Yosef slipped out of his cloak, his tunic. Vayazev Bigdei Biyada. He left the garment that she had held so fast in her hand. He left her holding it. Vayonas, he escaped. Vayetzi achutza, and he went outside. So why does it say Vayonas Vayetzi? He escaped and went outside. Say Vayonas achutza, or Vayetzi achutza. So Kliyakar says, when a man runs into the street, it's always suspicious. So Yosef didn't want to make any kind of suspicion. He knew she could frame him. So he raced through the house. He raced through the house. When he walked out the door, he walked out calmly. Nobody should say, here, a guy runs out of a house minus a shirt. How is that going to look? So therefore, Yosef raced through the homes before she could get to him. But when it came, that was Vayonos. When it came to going outside, Vayetzei Achutza. He very calmly left the home. So he was about to sin. He was about to cave in to the pressure. And could anybody have blamed him? I mean, this is the pressures that are, really, in Torah literature, it says unprecedented. No man ever withstood such pressure. But what enabled him to do this was that he saw his father's face. So just being an observant Jew wasn't good enough. He needed to see his father's face. What does that mean, he saw his father's face? How come remembering God? So page Reish Chaf Aleph in the Birim book. Simon Lamentes. We have a quote from the Gemara here. This is the fuller quote of what Rashi alludes to. Rashi says in Masechah Seita, and it's found in Masechah Seita on page 36. And this is the quote: "Ba'oseh Shah, at that moment when Yosef is about to sin, at that moment, so all of a sudden, Ba'asa demus deyuknei shel aviv. Suddenly, there appeared the image of his father." He saw the image of Yaakov in the window. It's like a miracle. He saw the image of Yaakov in the window. And he saw the image of Yaakov in the window, and he said, I can't do this. I can't. He was teetering on the edge, about to cave in. So the Rebbe asks a question. Sarah Bir. Why can't we say he remembered his father? What did he to see his father? He saw the image. What did he have to see the image for? Rebbe says something fascinating. If one analyzes this from a legal perspective, from Torah legalities, that is, yesh makim le'estapik. There is a question here. Im muter hayo le'Yosef limseris nafshe. Was Yosef allowed to give his life, not to do this sin? You know that she wanted him killed. It's just Potiphar. I didn't believe her. Potiphar said, I don't believe it. He thought she was lying. And she was a really capricious, wicked woman. She waited until they were making love. And she said, oh, by the way, this is what Yosef was trying to do to me. Which made him crazy. He became enraged. She did this on purpose. And then they had him arrested. And there's a fascinating story in the Medrash that she even went and took the egg white and threw it all over the bed and said, this is from Yosef. And at that time, the investigative powers of Egypt were not so smart. But the clerisy was smart. The priest was smart. So somehow the priest got mixed into this. I guess they brought a priest in. And the priest said, we should see if this is actually semen. And they did a test. They put it near a flame, and then they ran a needle over it, because the reaction of the egg is to congeal and get hard, whereas the semen would get soft. And they ran a needle and said, no, this is not semen. This is not semen material. This is egg white. So when that happened, Potiphar felt like a total fool. He said, she's a liar. He saw clearly his wife is, he probably knew his wife is that kind of person anyway. We saw that before. So he couldn't bring himself to kill Yosef, even according to the opinion that he was Rav Tabachin, that he was the executioner. Couldn't bring him. I said, how could I kill the guy? She lied. She framed him. So that's why she threw him in prison. Anyway, that's a fascinating medrash. But back to our point here, Yosef could well have died. He could have been put to death for this crime. Crime. Who says you're allowed to do that? Haridinishol Yosef, forget Yosef's decision that he elects to be an observant Jew. On a halachic level, Yosef's obligation is one of Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. He has to keep the Noachide laws. So since he has to keep the Noachide laws, Lufideus Mesiyomis, according to most opinions, Ben Noach Eino Mechuyiv B'Mesiris Nefesh. A Gentile does not have the obligation of sacrifice. You're not obligated to give your life. Mesiris Nefesh is a Jewish thing. A Yid, a Jew, is obligated to give his life rather than violate one of three sins. Gentile's not obligated. I have to die? It wasn't my fault. I didn't want to do this. I was forced into it. So in that case, Yosef, who at the time has a halacha from a legal perspective, there is no legality of a Ben Yisrael. He's a Ben Noach. He's a human being. He has an obligation to God. An obligation to God, he has an obligation first and foremost to defend his life. So who gave him the right to risk his life? Who gave him the right to do that? Kifi shudarshu chazal, as our sages expound on the words, va'afes dimchem lenafshei seichem edresh, I will follow up and demand your own blood, which the chazal say is suicide. If a person commits suicide, that's a terrible crime. It's a terrible aveda. So, ultimately, Yosef is just committing suicide here because he doesn't want to do an aveira, but he's committing suicide. So who says he legally was allowed to do that? Who says it was a good idea? Maybe he should just have said, okay, I have no choice. I'm not going to die for this. I tried. I said no for 12 months. I'm here. I'm stuck. Finished. So for this, remembering his father would not have been sufficient. The only thing that could work here was the image of his father. Why the image? The Gemara in Bava Metzia says, Shufra de Yankiv, the image of Yaakov, your father Jacob, was Ke'en Shufra de Adam Arishin. It was something very, very similar, a likeness between Yaakov Avinu, between the patriarch Jacob, and between Adam, between the first human being to walk the face of the earth. In other words, that the demus of Yaakov, the image of Yaakov, the face of Yaakov, is a reflective of the face or image of Adam, And the reason that the patriarchs were a reflection, why did they have a closer genetics to Adam than all the other people? Ki ha'avais hem shetiknu es hapagam. Because, says the Megala Amukos and other early Sfarim of Chassidus, Kes Hashem Tov, that the avot, the patriarchs, they were the ones who re-engineered or rectified the sins of other Merishim. And this is especially true with Yaakov. It's called Bechir Sheba Avot, the select of the patriarchs. So Adam Marishan caused the Shekhinah to leave this earth, this terrestrial reality, and the Avos brought it closer. Adam Marishan destroyed humanity's spiritual gestalt, and that was rebuilt or reconstituted by the Avos. So the Avos were the, if you will, antidote, the polar opposite of Adam. Adam was created perfect, and he besmirched and denigrated himself. The Avos did the exact opposite. They started off at the low level of humanity, which was at the time, the result of successive generations of moral deprivation and degeneration, and they fixed this. And Yaakov is the perfection of that, the climax of that process of fixing, undoing the damage of Adam. Now, Yosef suddenly saw his father's image, and he knew all of this. And he remembered about the sin of Adam HaRishon. And he remembered how his father had labored to fix, to rectify, to perfect that sin. And this was a memory that gave him the strength to be able to overcome the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, in this moment of great challenge. Huge test. Huge, huge moral test. And at this moment, he was able to overcome all of the different thoughts that, of course, were why it's not such a bad thing. Anybody else would do this. What else could God have expected me? Why did God put me in this position? I'm not obligated to die. Who cares anyway? Nobody will ever know. 1,000 things he could have been saying at the time. Justifications. And this is also indicated in the words that he escaped. Vayonas, he ran. Vayetzei achutza. Yosef went outside of what? He went outside of his own ideas, of his ideologies, of his framework of rationalization, because at this point, after 12 months, he's been rationalized what he's doing. He no longer felt a guilt, he no longer felt a conscience. He felt this is, nobody could ever judge him for it. And Yosef transcended this. And it's a very powerful lesson that this speaks to us, to every one of us. And there are times when we have tests in life, and times when we're challenged about a moral issue, a spiritual issue, about an issue of religious devotion, doing what Hashem wants, or behaving inappropriately. And we have all the justifications lined up. We have all the reasons why it's not so bad. God will understand. And then at that time, you have to remember the image of Yaakov. What is the image of Yaakov? The concept of Yaakov's face or image being reflective of other Marishan's face or image. Remember at that moment that with all the rationalizations in the world, and Adam HaRishon had lots of good rationalizations too, what's wrong is still wrong. And not only it's wrong, it could bring about a world of darkness, which is what Adam HaRishon did in a single fell swoop. And so the story of Yosef and the story of how and why Yosef was able to withstand the pressure is actually a story for each and every one of us. It's not just about the original desperate housewife, Potiphar's wife, making advance on Yosef. It's about every one of us being time and again in compromising positions. And here is a meditation. Here is a contemplation that every one of us could use at that moment when your moral compass is off, when you have all the justifications. You remember the Musta Yungtish Yankiv Aviv. You remember that we've come here, we were placed here on a mission by Hashem. Our job is to fix the mistakes of the past. And the only way we can do that is by doing the right thing, regardless of how difficult or challenging it might be. And that's the story.